The national shift in the retail marketplace toward e-commerce has triggered the loss of vital mall anchor stores and a downward spiral in customer counts at Book World stores. That was the statement from a Book World executive last week announcing its plan to close all 45 of its stores. The stores sell not only books, but puzzles, toys, games, magazines, trading cards, and other merchandise. We're checking in on the health of brick-and-mortar bookstores this hour in light of the Book World liquidation news. Michael Cater is the founder of Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Lunch, a website and newsletter covering the book-selling industry. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Well, first of all, do you feel a certain sense of loss whenever another bookstore chain goes out of business?
I think anyone who cares about books and publishing feels badly anytime a bookstore goes out of business, and certainly when a whole group of stores goes all at once, you feel badly both for the communities involved as well as the people who worked in that business. There are also, unfortunately, hundreds of employees who are going to lose their jobs as a result of Book World going under.
Book World found its niche. It served mostly smaller communities, smaller towns, towns that maybe a Barnes & Noble wouldn't be in, or even an independent bookseller. How big of a loss is it to a smaller community when a bookstore like Book World goes out of business?
Well, obviously, it's best for the communities to speak for that for themselves. And I'm over here in New York, so I'm actually in a small town outside of New York City, but I have a bookstore right in my town, which I appreciate and patronize. I think we're seeing a reshaping of that landscape. Obviously, before online bookselling, once upon a time, if you lost your local store, you were really cut off from the world. And part of what Book World expressed and part of what we're seeing is that at least people in smaller communities, when they lose their stores, can get books. It becomes harder. At the same time, I think what we're seeing industry-wide is sort of a reinvention of the idea of what a bookseller and what a local bookseller can be. So there's sort of a turning of the tides in that we're seeing younger people coming back to bookselling, where once we thought everybody had given up on it, but it requires a lot of energy. It requires some innovation. It often comes back as smaller format stores than once were the norm in the bookselling industry.
And Book World cited this trend toward e-commerce, and immediately all eyes go to Amazon for the decision to close its stores. That's not a trend that's been coming in recent times.
Right.
And bookselling isn't much different than the precarious position we have in mall stores. So does this tend to be the reason why bookstores go under is because of the Amazon effect?
It's certainly a primary reason. As you said, pretty much any physical retailer is feeling stressed because of Amazon, and anyone who's got a physical store has to reconnect to why their store exists, why they need to have a physical presence, and what they mean in the community that they serve. And as I said, I think what we're seeing is a lot of booksellers rethinking, sometimes with a lot of energy, what their purpose is. And it's not just selling books. We see in the bookstores that are thriving, a lot of them are functioning as community centers and literary centers. You know, they're helping to bring authors and other speakers to their town. They're helping to service book clubs. They're helping to service schools. They're giving people who are interested in ideas and literature and culture a place to gather. If you're just selling books, it's pretty hard, right? Because everybody kind of thinks that they can get whatever book they want if they're willing to wait 24, 48, 72 hours for it to arrive.
Oh, so the sellers that are doing well, you're saying, are the ones that are creating a community space, ones that are bringing people together in the flesh.
Exactly, creating community space, and we're seeing people experiment with all kinds of new ideas. There's a whole wave in some modestly sized cities of people combining books and beer or books and wine. Booksellers are experimenting with all kinds of different product mixes, if you will.
Books and beer, I think, Michael, would go well in Wisconsin. I'm just saying, just
maybe
putting it out there.
Too, you know?
Books and cheese, yes. We need to cover all our bases. And so we've heard also that independent bookstores are doing pretty well. Is that true?
They're certainly doing better in terms of sheer numbers, right? So we're seeing more people open stores, and we're seeing the number of stores that have membership in the National Association, which is called the American Booksellers Association. Their numbers have been going up after pretty much bottoming out shortly after the introduction of e-books. If you go down a layer to what you're also seeing, as I said, is mostly people are opening smaller size stores. They're understanding that, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we thought a great bookstore had to sort of have almost every book you could think of on the shelves right there for you to browse. That was the Borders concept. That was the Barnes & Noble Superstore concept. Now we're seeing people understand that it is more about the owner's personality. It's about the curation, which books are in the store, how are they servicing you by helping you pick books from the great sea that's available, and as we were just discussing, how are they engaging with the community. So a lot of these newer stores that are opening are much smaller, which is easier for the bookseller to sustain. They still pack in a lot of inventory, and then as they develop an identity and establish themselves, often they're able to open multiple locations.
And so we are talking right now with Michael Cater about the closing of Book World stores, what it means for the rest of the book buying landscape. Where do you buy books? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Book World closing all its stores? Do you have one in your community? Where do you buy books these days? Is it in store, online, or elsewhere? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Michael Cater is the founder of Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Lunch, a website and newsletter covering the bookselling industry. Michael, what I think I'm hearing from you is smaller staff, less overhead, more curation, more community. Perhaps that is a formula that could keep brick-and-mortar bookstores open.
Exactly. That seems to be what's driving a lot of the new activity. You know, we're also seeing, interestingly, some changes just in the business model that drives the store, and this might be interesting to some of your listenership, because often in smaller communities, what people are doing is even, you know, they're going to crowdfunding sites to raise money from their community. They're often doing community loans, where the community members are contributing the money to finance the stores. They're often selling memberships, so they're essentially asking people to, you know, commit to buy a book a month, but pay for it up front, and then you'll have a store in your community. So people are finding ways that they can find the sort of literary patrons in the community, if you will, and bring them into the mechanism of establishing the store and keeping it going, and getting them to embrace this idea that the store is their store, right? That membership means you're a part of this store, too, not just for the one time that you need a book quickly, but to make it your literary resource in your community and to really be an active participant in that store's survival and success.
Completely different funding model, funding formula here than what you would consider to be the typical retail funding formula. I'm almost hearing more of a nonprofit type bent.
It's close to that. There are some stores that have set themselves up specifically as nonprofits. But as I said, that, you know, I think a lot of local retailers are turning to these alternate models, both of funding or at least financing, to try to help them really be embedded in their communities, not just in a service way, but in a financial way, particularly when there are important things like a bookstore that really make people feel like a community is thriving. You know, the farmers sort of led the way on some of this, right, by selling shares of their output. The sort of the community share idea is creeping its way into bookstores, too.
How has the online crowdsourcing gone for these bookstore models?
It works a lot of ways. Many people use, you know, there are two or three well-known crowdfunding sites where people will post their offerings and try to engage people. Often it's accelerated by local media, people helping to spread the word that an important community resource is either trying to get started or trying to save itself. Some of these stores just do it by Facebook or do it by their own email newsletters. I think smaller stores are finally becoming a little bit more engaged in using social media to cultivate their, you know, there's the old Kevin Kelly idea of 1,000 followers is what you need to sustain a business or an enterprise. And I think a lot of people are realizing they don't have to sell to everyone all over the world, but if they can identify the people in their community who really want to support that store and have them on an email list or reach them on Facebook or reach them somewhere else, that they can develop that super close relationship, right, and make those people feel more connected to the business.
Appleton-based Book World has started its liquidation sale at its stores in 7 states, including 20 locations in Wisconsin. We're checking in on the pulse of book selling here in Wisconsin and around the country. Join in the discussion about Book World, 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Book World closing all of its stores? Do you have one in your community? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Independent bookstores have seen a bit of a bounce back that some industry people interpret as the result of digital fatigue. They're chalking it up to people who are tired of spending so much time on their screens that they just want to venture out into the world a bit and browse among print books and buy them in person. Perhaps it's true in more urban markets where you can find the population density to develop a following. We're unpacking this news this hour that Book World is closing all its stores, 20 in Wisconsin, more in other states. 800-642-1234. Where do you buy books these days? In store, online? Is it important for you to support your local bookseller? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Michael Cater is helping us understand the book economy. He's founder of the Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Lunch, a website and newsletter covering the book selling industry. Let's take a call now with Steve in Glendale. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi. I am a former employee at Half Price Books, which has a location in Appleton and 4 others throughout Wisconsin and over 100 nationwide now. I wanted to know what the guest's remarks and thoughts are about a bookstore like that, which buys books from the public, resells them at a much lower cost, and what he feels about that market as it affects independent bookstores.
Well, there's no question that Half Price Books has been one of the success stories recently and certainly has a successful model going. I don't know that they have particular impact on other stores, if that's what you're asking. Certainly we've also seen that reselling of books online has become an important factor as well, through Amazon as well as through A-Books and other resale sites. That's been established for a while. I think what we know is there's certainly a certain type of book reader who's very interested in value, right? And value is a lot of what's driving Half Price Books as well as some of these other operations. Then there are other book buyers who care less about value and care more about which book they're reading or the book that they're getting, the book that they want, and are less price sensitive. So we really see a mix of buyers and needs throughout the marketplace. But Half Price Books certainly shows where there's a continuing opportunity.
And Michael, what about stores that give you points for the amount of books you bring in or media you bring in, and then you turn around and use those points in the store to buy things? Is that model working?
We've seen that model in place through a number of other stores. There are certainly customers for whom that's of appeal. I don't think... None of these sort of points-based, trade-in-based models seem to have sort of taken over, if you will. The stores that try them seem to attract some customers with it, and there's some people who like that. It requires a certain amount of effort or a certain amount of dedication. It's obviously designed to drive store loyalty, but there's not a whole lot of indication that that's a movement that's going to take over. It's, I think, one of the tools in the basket that different booksellers are trying to figure out how to develop customer loyalty.
Well, Steve, thanks for calling in. We had Heidi who couldn't stay with us, and she says she loves libraries, but she frequents bookstores for travel books. She says it's better to look at them in person and to have them and be able to look through them before you buy them. Is that perhaps a specific niche there, travel books, to be able to see them in person?
Sure. You know, travel books are interesting, right? Because those are one of those categories of books that people thought would go away entirely because you can now get so much travel information online. But once again, we've seen that the lines of travel books consolidate, so there's probably less competition in that business. But the people who publish them seem very closely connected to their readership. Bookstores have always worked because you can browse books first, and the whole superstore wave was about making the bookstore a comfortable space to go hang out in and check out books before you buy them. And I think, you know, you were talking before about digital fatigue. One thing that we hear a lot from people is that online bookselling is great when you know the exact book you want and all you care about is price. But it's not a great place to go when you're not sure what book you want, right? And you want to either check out a category of books or have a recommendation or browse and see what captures your fancy. That's not where online bookselling does so well. And so that's where the physical bookstore can make a difference, whether it's a category like travel books where you want to look at a number of books and figure out which is the best one for you, or less specific needs where you just want to browse and have different recommendations and types of books catch your eye.
What about the category of children's books? How are children's books doing and in bookselling in brick and mortar?
Children's books are probably the secret success engine behind bookstores. We've seen the proportion of children's books being sold in bookstores go up. We've seen more stores either expand their children's sections or offer or even dedicated stores that are primarily about children's books. Children's books are that perfect example, both of books where you want to see them, touch them, or let the child browse them before you buy them, but also children's books are a great example of gift giving, right?
Mm.
That whole business is driven by people buying books for someone else. And whether it's for a special occasion or just to help encourage the development of a child you love, lots of people buy children's books for other people. And a lot of people want that experience of either talking to an experienced bookseller or looking through a category of books. And a lot of parents want their kids to read. They want their kids to have that basic skill set, but also the excitement of understanding the way that a book can open a window onto all kinds of lives.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Let's take another call now. Artis in Richland Center. Hi, Artis. Go ahead.
Hi there. It's a great day. I haven't spoken to anybody yet this morning, so I might be a little foggy here. We have a great library here, and we have a lot of books donated to the library, let alone those that they discard. Twice a year, we have a book sale. We had one about 2 weeks ago, and believe me, people flock there. The low income, they need something to read. Since we don't really have, we have one bookstore in town, but naturally they're pricier. But then we have, in the yards, people have these little libraries, and my neighbor has one. She says, I didn't realize I could go up there like every day and get books in the landing upstairs at the library because they're cheap anyway, like 50 cents a piece or 25. Fridays, it's a dollar bag day, and it's a good way to improve the economy around, help the low income or anyone. But it's a fun time to get together. You know who the readers are.
Artis, thank you so much for calling in. Michael, what about little free libraries and also the community that comes together at our local libraries?
Libraries are a hugely important resource, and this whole little free library movement is a terrific one. Again, this is where you were talking about digital fatigue and digital versus physical before. This is part of where we see the wonderful endurance of the printed book, right? As printed books don't fall apart. They don't need batteries. It's almost perfect technology. So books can have many lives. And what we're seeing here, too, is communities figuring out how to give books life after life after life, which right now you can only do with a printed book. Part of the problem, unfortunately, is that we've also seen a lot of our local governments starve these libraries of resources. So part of what your caller was talking about is very important, which is, again, community supporting not just the local bookstore but also the local libraries. And these donations and this extra activity, I think, have become important funding sources for the libraries as well as ways of engaging.
Artis, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it. We're with Michael Cater this hour. He's helping us understand the book economy. He's founder of Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Lunch, a website and newsletter covering the book-selling industry. We gave him a call after the news last week that Book World has decided to close all of its stores, 20 of them in Wisconsin, more in other states. You can join in the discussion about book selling, 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to Book World closing all of its stores? Do you have one in your community? Is it important for you to support your local bookstore? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have a Facebook post from someone here in Madison. They say, we've got a bookstore that specializes in mystery books. Are niche stores like this one working in 2017?
You know, that used to be a very successful approach to book selling. Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of the niche stores go out of business lately. There are very few mystery stores left in the country. There used to be stores that would specialize in cookbooks. There used to be a whole network of LGBTQ bookstores. And unfortunately, at least in sheer numbers, that trend has gone down. As you said, children's is probably the one type of specialty store that I think is still thriving. But a lot of the other specialty stores have gone online only because they can reach a much larger audience that way, right? And so there are fewer and fewer of those in physical store footprints.
And while Amazon has no problem selling you a physical book and you getting it the next day, their bread and butter seems to be ebooks and Kindles. But according to the Association of American Publishers, ebook sales for the first 9 months of 2016 were down nearly 20% compared to the same period a year earlier. Michael, what's going on there?
Well, that figure is a complicated one. It has to be taken a little bit with a grain of salt. That's a dollar-based figure. So it's telling you the revenue that the big established publishers are driving from ebooks. They're getting less money from ebooks. It's not telling us about the unit sales, which is how many ebooks are being sold. And as many people may know, Amazon has developed a substantial publishing program of their own and has developed a substantial program that lets individual authors self-publish through Amazon and now even offers a lot of those books through subscription. So, you know, it's less clear that ebooks themselves are decreasing overall if you counted all the units. They're just not driving the same dollars for the established publishers. What the established publishers are seeing is that they're getting more dollars now from digital audiobooks, even as their digital ebook sales are coming down. So they're kind of shifting their dollars, if you will. And also with consumers, digital audiobooks, we know, are continuing to grow at a rate much bigger than ebooks. It's a smaller market, right? So smaller markets can grow more quickly than bigger, mature markets. So that's the big question in the publishing industry is, how big will digital audiobooks get?
And to probe a little further, this self-publishing market on Amazon, are people really seeking out that content? Is there an appetite for self-published works?
There's clearly a substantial market there. The question is it a market just within Amazon? There are some self-published authors who are also publishing successfully at Barnes & Noble and through iBooks and through Google and the other platforms. Kindle has become such a dominant platform, and they try to encourage self-published authors to publish exclusively through them. So they've tried to make that market their own. They've created a lot of great opportunities for a lot of authors. It seems to appeal to a particular type of reader. It seems to appeal to a price-sensitive reader. It seems to work particularly in the genres. A lot of what's working in self-published books is genre fiction. So there are a lot of mixed signals from the marketplace about where that fits in the landscape. But it is unquestionably a substantial piece of the ebook market now.
And there are some types of books that just can't be replicated on an iPad or on a Kindle screen. Can you give us some examples of those types of books that you need in your hands?
Sure. Well, almost anything illustrated obviously works much better in print, although you can now get it in ebook if you wish. Longer books, nonfiction, books with complicated formats. You know, really where ebooks have thrived is in what we call narrative works, so books with a strong storyline, and particularly genre fiction, where readers are kind of ravenous and just want more stories, more stories, more stories. There's actually research that shows that particularly when it comes to nonfiction and complex ideas, our brains do look at the screen information differently than the printed page. So nonfiction has never sold nearly as well in ebook form as fiction. You're talking about children's books. Mm. That's obviously, people want children to have book in hand. And curiously, even teens and relatively younger readers seem to like print over digital, in part because they have so many things they want to do with their devices that isn't about reading. When they read, they want what they call a real book. They want something that they can identify as being a book rather than just one more thing that lives on their screens.
We know the nation's largest book chain, Barnes & Noble, is struggling. The company reported a second quarter loss of nearly $11 million in 2017. Outlook not very promising. What do we know is happening to Barnes & Noble?
Barnes & Noble is trying to reposition themselves for this changing world. They tried to compete in ebooks and were successful for a little while, but were eventually overwhelmed by Amazon. And quite honestly, most of the money they've been losing has been in the winding down of their Nook operation to a small adjunct to the business. They're also coming to understand that these giant superstores are not always economically sustainable, so they're in the middle of reformatting their stores, and often when lease renewals come up, either shifting locations or taking a giant 25, 30,000 square foot store and seeing if they can figure out how to turn that into a somewhat smaller store that can still drive a substantial amount of business. So they're finding their way. They've gone through a number of management changes. They have yet another new energetic CEO, and they're trying to find their way to the sustainable new model for a big book-selling chain.
Michael Cater, as we start to wrap up here, what might booksellers do, whether they be Barnes & Noble or your local store down the street? What do they need to do in the coming years to stay viable and to stay strong in business?
Well, we've covered a lot of the themes. I think that connection to the reader is really where everyone in publishing is focused, whether it's the author or the publisher or the bookseller. It's connecting to the reader, understanding what the reader's looking for, where does the reader need help, where do they need guidance, where do they need recommendations, what kind of resources are they looking from a physical store that they can't get online, and trying to provide that service. It is about service, but it is about creating a place where people can go, where they value the experience that they're getting when they go there. And that can mean different things for different people in different communities. It can be about the reading experience. It can be even about the authorship experience and giving people guidance on their writing as much as their reading.
And we're going to leave it there. Michael, thanks for being with us. That was Michael Cater, the founder of Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Lunch, a website and newsletter covering the bookselling industry. We've been discussing the book world chain closing and a bigger discussion about whether brick and mortar bookstores are viable. After the news, we'll get the latest details from yesterday's shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.